Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back as we discuss romances and relationships in our four nice selections this year, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula. Ashley Wilkes is the man with whom Scarlett is obsessed. I mean, that's like the most basic way to think about him. He is gentlemanly, indecisive. He, quote, loves, unquote, Scarlett. But that's really lust, right? But he knows he has more in common with Melanie, who is his... It's a little unclear. They're not first cousins. They're some sort of distant cousins, but it's known that they're going to get married. It's like a family thing. The Hamiltons and the Wilkes always marry each other. That sounds like inbreeding, but we are talking about the, you know, Southern Confederacy, so maybe that was a thing. He's tormented by his physical attraction to Scarlett. I think in some scenes, I actually feel kind of sorry for him, which we may have to discuss, in later episodes. But it's just pathetic. He is just pathetic in so many ways. But unfortunately for him and Scarlett, his failure to deal with his true feelings for her really ruins any chance for her to have happiness with Rhett Butler. It really does. I lay a lot of that on Ashley. He's not, just as Rhett is not open and honest with her about how he really feels, Ashley never quite cuts Scarlett loose. He never quite tells her, you know, he doesn't love her the way she thinks he loves her. And that's a disservice. He does her a disservice. Similar to Rhett Butler, Ashley doesn't necessarily love the Confederacy. He loves the South. He hates war. He tells his friends at the beginning of the book, who are eager to start fighting with the North, that, quote, most of the misery in the world has been caused by war. Now, that's a philosophical statement that his counterparts, his friends, his peers do not understand. They're just like, what? You know, they don't get it. He fights because of his loyalty to the above-mentioned peaceful life he had in Georgia under, you know, in the pre-war lifestyle. One of the things that I think, you know, we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about racism and prejudice and all that stuff in these books is, you know, he claims he would have freed the slaves after the death of his father if the war hadn't freed them already. You know, his willingness to free the slaves further demonstrates his impractical nature in a way, because if the slaves were free, he would not be able to run the plantation, whether there was a war or not, and live the serene life that he loves with his head in his books and up in the clouds, you know. I mean, that culture was built on slavery. That life existed because of slavery. That Ashley fails to kind of face that fact truthfully is just another flaw in his character, if you will. I mean, he's really seriously flawed, semi-hero guy. Now, like a lot of the characters in Margaret Mitchell's novel, Ashley has a great deal of affection for the slaves on his father's plantation and the role that they play in his own serene bucolic life is colored by that affection. That's part of the problem with Gone with the Wind as a book. It's a fiction, it's set in a historical time period, and we have characters like Ashley and so many other characters who, quote, have a great deal of affection for the slaves that work their plantations. I mean, you can't in modern life wrap your brain around that. There's no way to say that's okay. And yet, this is a book written at a certain time, about a certain time, and, you know, we have to try to see these characters as fictional characters who see, who are maybe being written to teach us, you know, have teachable moments for us. I feel like the more I reread this book, the more I feel like, yeah, the lessons are coming. Now, Ashley does something that most of the Southern people in this book do not do. He has an acceptance that the end of that beloved way of life is caused by more than just the burning of 12 oaks and poverty and physical labor and being beholden to Scarlet and all that stuff. He has an acceptance that it's done. It's over. It's never coming back. He is not one of the characters in the book who longs for the past. In fact, he is just saddened by it all. Most of his childhood friends have been killed or maimed, you know, wounded in war to the point where they're maimed for life, or in some other way in the reconstruction part have terrible, you know, have something happen that ruins their lives. Like, I think it's Tony Fontaine, I think is his name. He has to flee to Texas forever because he killed a Yankee and during Reconstruction, not during the war, after. And it was actually that Scarlet's family's former overseer, Jonas Wilkerson. Tony Fontaine kills Jonas Wilkerson. And this is a part of the story that's very unpleasant because Wilkerson had encouraged a former slave to attempt to rape or have sex with Tony's sister-in-law, his brother had been killed in battle. And so he was, of course, responsible for his sister-in-law, a widow. And when he finds out that this former slave has been encouraged to go and attack her, assault her, he goes after the man responsible, Jonas Wilkerson, who's a white man, kills him, and he has to run away to Texas forever. It's a very dramatic and horrible part of the story because this is the Southern gentleman that is like the KKK guy, right? I mean, that's who Tony Fontaine represents. Ashley just sees all this as horror. He's not in favor of it. He doesn't really want to take up arms against Yankees after the war and be part of the KKK, but he also feels like he has no choice in the context of his life and everything. His entire world has been destroyed. And he's sad about that. He's sad that there are no more slaves to help him have a nice life. I mean, it's really, he's a very strange character. I do want to emphasize, though, that he doesn't want things to go back to the way they were, necessarily. I think it's chapter 41, when he comes back from fighting the war, he pleads with Melanie to move north. He's got a job offer to work in a bank in the North. This is not because he has some great affection for the Yankees or living in the North or anything like that. He just wants to be able to stand on his own two feet. Plantation life is over. That ain't going to happen. Never going to happen in Georgia for him. He's never going to be able to stand on his own two feet now that his family plantation home is gone and burned to the ground. If he ends up staying in Georgia, he will work for Scarlet. He will be beholden to her and her manipulative entreaties, and he doesn't want to do that. He wants to go north. Scarlet manipulates Melanie. Melanie, you know, cries to Ashley, how could he not help Scarlet in her hour of need and run one of the mills? And of course he gives in. And that's how he ends up in Atlanta running a mill for Scarlet. Not because he wants to. So everything that happens between Ashley and Melanie and Scarlet and Rhett after that point is all Scarlet's fault, you know, and we know it. So his role in the story is to represent a certain type of Southerner that Margaret Mitchell was familiar with from her childhood and from the stories she heard, and to also give us insight into characters like Tony Fontaine, who aren't necessarily like Ashley, who don't think like Ashley. All those other Southern gentlemen, you know, who were impacted by the war, they became the Southern people. They represent the Southerners in Margaret Mitchell's life who, you know, believed in the lost cause and the war never ended for them. Ashley's not one of those guys, but he is an element of Margaret Mitchell's childhood Southern life that she, you know, formed opinions about because of the stories that these people would tell about the Civil War and the Reconstruction era. So he informed a lot. His character came from her real life experiences.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent analysis, Alice. Margaret Mitchell, I think, wrote a really weak character, not weak in that she wrote him poorly,
no,
but
no.
because his character is weak.
Yeah.
I couldn't bring myself to hate Ashley.
No. Yeah.
Because there's not enough of him there to hate.
He is a fantasy. Yeah.
Yeah. His head's in the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
He struck me as quite sallow. I just had a vague kind of sense of pity and contempt.
Yeah.
I just wanted him to be a stronger character, to, you know, stand up for something with passion,
yeah.
you know, really fight for it, whether it's this woman or that woman or this cause, just...
Right, make a decision.
Yeah, he's so indecisive, yeah.
Yeah, he just...
Yeah, and life just kind of happens to
mm-hmm.
him. He and Scarlet only ever had the physical fantasy going on, and I'm so glad by the end Scarlet figures that out.
Yeah.
Ashley and Melanie are much better suited as a couple, but Melanie demonstrates much more inner strength, much more practicality than Ashley does. I can't help thinking that Melanie deserved better.
She did, yeah. That's a wonderful point to make, because, and what you said about Ashley just kind of drifting through and things just happen. Yeah, other people make things happen. Like, you know, Scarlet, Rhett, Melanie, they make things happen. Ashley just floats along in the things that other people make happen. He's not a very, it's not easy to respect him. In the beginning of the book, when Scarlet is describing her love for him and why she loves him, as it, you know, she's very young, and these memories are from when she's like 12, 13 years old up until now at 12 Oaks when she's 16. So for 3 or 4 years, she's had this fantasy in her mind about Ashley Wilkes, okay? She never lets go of that. So we see him through her eyes as that fantasy figure at the same time that we see the reality of him on the page every single time, not being that heroic knight in shining armor guy, right? So Margaret Mitchell wrote him incredibly well. You can't hate him. You can feel contempt and pity for him, but he's not even worth hating. What's mind-boggling is that everything Scarlet goes through, and yet she still sees him through those rose-colored glasses of basically childhood. It's quite remarkable that she's that dumb. But
instead of it being that she's dumb, it's that she is latching onto that as a survival mechanism.
Yeah, she holds on to Tara and Ashley throughout the whole book. It's one or the other. She's going to do something to save Tara. She's going to do something to save Ashley. It's or to stay close to him. All her decisions are based on those two things. Her own children don't even play that big of a part in her life. It's Tara and Ashley. And it's amazing. And I think you're right. I think those are her tethers to something that... that is her sanity, that's keeping her sane. Join us next time as we continue our discussion in our 4 nice books, Jane Eyre, Gone with the Wind, Little Women, and Dracula. This has been At the Round Table with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Round Table.